Blog Talk Radio.
Killed over 150 people.
250, easy.
All right, welcome everybody to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson, and man, it feels like I've been gone for a very long time, but it has been a couple weeks since I've had a chance to do the show. We've been undergoing some attempts to repair some technical issues that we've had. You know, the last couple of episodes have cut out on me in the middle of the show, which I apologize for. These are the dangers of live radio, I guess. But we've gotten some of the issues worked out. Not everything. Still got some work to do. But, hey, I feel like I had to do a show this week. I just feel like I had to because there were so many major movies coming out this week, from the one you just heard a clip from, The Hitman's Bodyguard, to Steven Soderbergh's Return, Logan Lucky, to another film that I really, really love called Patty Cakes. If you've never heard of Patty Cakes, it's one of those movies that might fly under the radar, but you should definitely go and check it out. In fact, tomorrow I will be airing my interview with the film's star, Danielle McDonald, who I'm not going to lie, I kind of got a thing for. So what can I say? But anyway, she's pretty cool. And she's appeared in a couple of movies before this. Every Secret Thing, which is a drama that had Elizabeth Banks in it. And she had a really tiny part in The East, which was the Britt Marling film. From a few years ago. She had a small role in that. But I'll talk about Patty Cakes more in just a few minutes. I'm flying solo on this episode, so this might be a shorter show. Like I said, still trying to work things out. I didn't want to risk having guests come on and then have the show mess up again. So it's just me, so I'll drop a few reviews. I got some news, big news, from the week. Star Wars movies, Batman movies, all sorts of weird stuff going on in Hollywood, man. I'm not going to do everything because I know I'm going to do another show in just a few days. I don't want to take up all the news, but these are the big projects, the big announcements. I'll talk a little bit about those. And of course, Blu-ray releases from yesterday, kind of a slow week for Blu-rays, but, you know how it goes. And I want before I get going, I want to make sure I thank everybody who's been signing up for Critical, the Movie Critics Network over on Blog Talk Radio. Like I've been telling you for months, man, we got everything for you. If you're a movie fan, I think we've got a show that will suit you. So check us out on blogtalkradio.com or check out Critical, the Movie Critics Network over on Facebook. Follow us there. Follow us, like us, do all that stuff, and then share it with your friends so they can be introduced to the same awesome shows that you are. All right, let's start off with The Hitman's Bodyguard, which, you know, I had a lot of fun with this movie. The Hitman's Bodyguard stars Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson. That's really all you needed to say. Samuel Jackson and Ryan Reynolds. Deadpool and Nick Fury together on the same screen. These are two of the funniest people in Hollywood. At least I think so. Samuel Jackson can't ever not be funny. Even in the movies where he's not supposed to be funny, he's funny. He's funny in Kong Skull Island. I don't know if there's anything inherently funny about his character. He's trying to kill King Kong. What's funny about him? But he's still kind of funny anyway. It's just Samuel L. Jackson. It's just the way he is. And Ryan Reynolds, the guy's been a jokester his entire career. Putting these two together, you just knew it was going to make something combustible. And that's what the Hitman's Bodyguard is. Ryan Reynolds plays a triple-A rated protection agent, basically a high-class security guard. Not just a high-class security guard, a high-class bodyguard whose career is ruined after a botched job. A couple years later, he's asked to protect Samuel Jackson's character, a world-class hitman, protect him and transport him to a courtroom so that he can testify against an international criminal played by Gary Oldman. Now, the problem is Reynolds and Jackson's characters are old rivals. In fact, Jackson's character has tried to kill Reynolds about 150 to 250 times. So that is an issue. These two hate each other. And, of course, their oil and water dynamic is where a lot of the jokes come in. But to me, it felt like this movie was ad-libbed for the most part. And I don't know if it was or not. It probably wasn't. They probably followed the script to the letter. But it didn't feel that way. And that's a credit to Reynolds and Jackson, who are just naturally humorous people. And it's clear these two are on the same wavelength in terms of their style of humor. They are really, really funny together. The movie's directed by Patrick Hughes, who his name's not overly familiar, but he did direct The Expendables 3, which to me is the best movie of the Expendables franchise by far. By leaps and bounds, it's best. And he brings some of those action chops to this movie. There's a lot of violence, a lot of vulgarity. This movie is not for kids at all, not in the least. No, not at all. It's very bloody. Lots of cuss words. The word motherfucker is said a lot. So, yeah. So anyway, there's a lot going on in this movie, of course, as these two try to battle their way to safety. But the thing that I love so much is the dynamic between Jackson and Reynolds. They really do have a great chemistry together. And it extends to the supporting characters, like Salma Hayek, who plays Jackson's wife, who is imprisoned because of her husband's career, basically. So she's as saucy and as vulgar as the rest of them. In fact, she may be the funniest character of them all. She doesn't get as much screen time, but she's pretty funny. Salma Hayek is great in these kinds of movies. There's a terrific scene where Hayek and Jackson are kind of showing their origin and their relationship. And it takes place in this run-down cantina that looks like it was built on the Hellmouth. It's like stuff is on fire everywhere. People are fighting, getting killed everywhere. And it's like, if you can survive this place, you can pretty much survive anything. Your relationship is never going to fall apart. And it's just a great scene. But The Hitman's Bodyguard is a movie that I love. I know not everybody dug it because it's sort of simplistic. Of course it is. But I love these kinds of movies, man. They don't make these kinds of buddy comedies that much anymore unless they're by Shane Black. And this kind of has some of the trappings of a Shane Black movie, except the dialogue isn't quite as sharp. It kind of reminds me of The Last Boy Scout, which, yes, I know Shane Black wrote it, but it doesn't feel like one of his Lethal Weapon movies. It feels dirtier. That's kind of how this movie feels to me. So The Hitman's Bodyguard, if you're looking for something funny, this is the movie you're going to go check out, okay? So that is The Hitman's Bodyguard. Samuel Jackson, Ryan Reynolds, Salma Hayek, Gary Oldman, and Elodie Young, who is Elektra in Daredevil and on The Defenders. I should do a show about The Defenders. Nah, I won't. You can go check out my review of The Defenders over on punchdarkcritics.com. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to the next movie, which is one of my personal favorites, Patty Cakes. And here is a clip. It's actually more of a music video, but check it out.
They call a bitch Cassidy, I'm the left hand kid. I got that platinum voice, you got that poison pen. They call us Gundam Rose, Gundam Rose, Gundam Rose, kill up be going. It's a Romeo remix. Come on, let's get
no.
it.
Nope.
Come on.
Nope. Patty and Jerry, we will be legendary from the bottom like sodomy. Fuck the game up with Shinnery. I'm in my own trap as I flip the world to birdie. My verse is full of curses because I'm stuck in dirty Jersey. Let's move to New York City.
Yep.
We'll make a couple millies with that shit up 50-50.
Yep.
I'll get my left titty and a kidney just across the shitty river prison tunnel. Come on, Jerry, singing with me.
Beauty and the Beast, Thelma to Louise, you know real G-stock, that's our killer feet, won't you please?
Over that rainbow, we pay tolls, where roads all are paved, golden angels in gold chains, and nighttime is day glow, I'm Jane Doe, a loser, this shit's so confusing, I just want to move where my life like a movie, should be getting busy, but I'm feeling very busy, drop that hot shit like I do in your jacuzzi.
That was so sick.
Oh shit, I gotta go to work.
You know, that was sick, right? That was a scene from Patty Cakes, which stars Danielle McDonald. Can't remember who the director's name is. I feel kind of bad that I forgot his name because he was part of the interview that I conducted with them also. And we had a lot in common, him and I, and actually all of us. The movie features a score by Skyzoo, who's like my favorite rapper, and he helped Danielle McDonald, learn how to rap. She's an Australian girl, never rapped in her life. She's about as different from Patty, aka Patty Cakes, aka Killa P, as possible. But they were surprised when they found out that I had a Skyzoo mixtape playlist on my phone. Yeah, I am a Skyzoo fan. He's my favorite rapper. But Patty Cakes is about Patricia, Killa P, Patty Cakes, a Jersey girl who wants to break out of her small town and become a rap star. The thing that I love about this movie is that it's refreshingly old school. If you're a 90s hip-hop fan, man, you're going to love this movie, man. It has that golden age hip hop vibe, man. She's striving to be a rapper like MC Light or Queen Latifah, you know, ladies first. That's what she's trying to do, and you got to respect the rags to riches story that she has to create for herself. You know, she's living with her mom, played by Bridget Everett, who I'm really starting to like a lot. You may have seen her in Fun Mom Dinner, and gosh, she's been in a lot of other movies too, and I can't think of any at the moment. He plays her mom, who is a former singer in her own right, knows the trials and tribulations of trying to go and be a musician. It doesn't work out for most people. She's worried about that, about the same thing happening to her daughter. So she's dealing with that. She's dealing with having no money, having no prospects. The only thing she has to live on is this dream to become a great hip hop star. And for someone like her, you know, white plus sized white girl from Jersey, that's not going to be easy. So it's a twist on a formula we've seen a lot of times with other films like this. It's not usually seen from the perspective of a overweight white girl. It's just not something we see, but it comes with unique problems and unique situations to Patty, and I fell in love with that. Not only that, but also Danielle McDonald and her style, man. I think she spits fire on the tracks. The tracks are pretty hot, and she busts some raps that I don't think guys nowadays could do. But then again, you know, I don't got no respect for a lot of the rappers today, but I respect Danielle McDonald. I respect her raps. And maybe that's a credit to Skyzoo and his tutelage. But I respect it. She spits fire in this movie, man. And there's just something authentic and genuine about her performance here. And about the direction and the script by Jeremy Jasper. I finally remembered his name. Jeremy Jasper. who is a former musician as well. We talked about that in the interview also. So he put a little bit of his own upbringing into the story. It's funny. The film debuted at Sundance in January, and I wanted to see it, but there were two hip hop movies that were playing at Sundance this year, and I basically had time to pick one. So it was either go see Patty Cakes, which I had never heard of, but knew there was some buzz about, or go see Roxanne, which is the story of Roxanne Shanté. Now, I grew up a fan of Roxanne Shanté, so I went that way. And I shouldn't have, because Patty Cakes is a far superior movie to Roxanne. Patty Cakes is an excellent movie. It's a crowd pleaser. It's fun. It kind of reminds you a little bit of Hustle and Flow. It's got that same sort of, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of mentality to it. I think people are going to check it out and they're going to like it. So go see Patty Cakes if it's playing in your town. It should be expanding into more theaters soon if it hasn't already. All right. I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about Logan Lucky, and then we're going to drop some news and some Blu-rays, and then we're going to get out of here. So I will be right back. And of course, I dropped some real hip-hop after talking about some Patty Cakes, right? In fact, I should drop some Sky Zoo. Let's drop some Sky Zoo, because that seems appropriate.
What did you do?
Well, hello. I guess someone grew up. What's your name again, little Logan?
Melly.
Melly! Melly, Melly, Melly. That rhymes with smelly. Shut up.
There's clothes for you both in the bag, and Clyde, I put something special in there for you.
Thanks, Mel. You're going pretty fast.
Well, we got a lot of roads to cover, so yeah, there will be speeding.
Gunning for 100 in the neon blue car that probably ain't even on the market yet? Don't you think you're asking for to be pulled over?
Sunday on a holiday weekend. Police department hit by budget cuts. There's only one musker patrolling the whole highway for the next 40 miles.
But that's still one musker.
It's been handled.
Millie, I'm about to get naked back here. So no bacon. I said no bacon.
Would you give me my arm, please?
Is it this one?
There's so much that's really stupid about that clip from Logan Lucky. First of all, could you guys tell that was Daniel Craig, the get naked guy? That was Daniel Craig. When was the last time you heard Daniel Craig sound like he was having as much fun as he just sounded like in that clip? He's never had that much fun, not even as playing James Bond. He just never has. He always seems like he's, you know, being dragged off to the torture chamber to play a role. It's not saying he's not good when he gets there, but geez, he just doesn't seem like he's enjoying himself a lot of the time. Well, he's having fun in Logan Lucky. Yes, that was Adam Driver, and yes, he was asking for his arm. He plays a member of the Logan family, the cursed Logan family. who lost his arm, not in the war, but coming back from the war, which makes it even worse. Channing Tatum plays his brother, who is trying to find a way to hold on to his daughter, or at least maintain a close relationship with his daughter, who lives with her mother, his ex-wife. She's remarried, and they're talking about moving to Virginia, away from Channing Tatum, who is in West Virginia. He works construction at a place all the way down in North Carolina at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. And he gets fed up after he gets fired over a technicality. So he decides that what he's going to do is to rob the Charlotte Motor Speedway. Because what else are you going to do? That's you steal from what you know, right? What's interesting about this film is that it's Steven Soderbergh, and it's his first movie back in 4 years. It's his first film in 4 years. The last movie he did was Side Effects in 2013, which I pretty much already forgotten about. Not that he was really ever gone. I mean, he was so busy with TV, doing The Nick, and he also helped out on Magic Mike 2. So he's never really gone away, but it's his first feature in 4 years. And Soderbergh goes back to the genre that he's best at, which is the heist drama. Now, this is the heist movie. Now, this is different than the Ocean's 11 films in a sense that these are not characters who are slick and polished and they know what they're doing the whole way through. These are not skilled tacticians. They're not seasoned thieves, and that's not what they are. They're West Virginia people. They're blue collar people. They got to work with what they have, and it's just something that's completely different. We don't get to see that very often in this kind of movie, which is kind of refreshing, and it's pretty funny too, because it makes for some hilarious errors on their part. What they don't know, they simply don't know. Like, there are a pair of brothers, Daniel Craig's brothers in the film, actually, who are supposed technical experts, but they can barely figure out how to turn on a computer. And Craig, he plays a bombs expert who is actually behind bars. So the first part of the heist has to be breaking him out. So there's all sorts of issues that arise in this thing. And of course, the best part of any heist movie is everything that happens before the actual heist. The heist is always the least impressive part, but the heist is actually kind of fun here too. And that's due to Soderbergh's clever direction, you know, his stylishness, and the fact that he keeps just enough hidden to surprise us while the heist is taking place. So Logan Lucky, to me, is a more than successful return to the big screen for Soderbergh. I love Channing Tatum in this. It's kind of a reserved role for him. He's kind of playing the straight man here, while the best lines go to Daniel Craig and Adam Driver's deadpan humor. But everybody here does really good work. And I got to give special props to Riley Coe, who I think is just awesome in pretty much everything. She's been on fire lately from American Honey to Mad Max. Pretty sure she's in Mad Max, right? She was in Mad Max, wasn't she? Yeah, she was in Mad Max. To It Comes at Night. She's just been on fire. And I think I can't wait for the chance to come when she gets to lead her own movie where she's not just a supporting player. I'm looking forward to that. So Logan Lucky, another film to go check out. It's got a great supporting cast surrounding it also, besides the ones I mentioned. Katie Holmes, Seth MacFarlane, Hilary Swank. Catherine Waterston, although I still don't understand why her role is in the movie. Sebastian Stan, Macon Blair, and so forth. Fantastic cast. Go check out Logan Lucky. Part of an amazing week of films. This is a really good week. You can barely go wrong. You can't go wrong with any of these movies this week. All right. Let's move on and let's talk about what came out on Blu-ray and DVD yesterday. The Tuesday, August 22nd. Only a couple of movies I'm going to mention because the rest are TV shows. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. obviously another huge hit for Marvel, helping to set up what is going to be Avengers Infinity War. I like this movie. It's funny. It's great. It's basically just a lot of fun to be with these characters again. The team of a-holes are always going to be enjoyable. And who doesn't like that freaking cast? And who doesn't love Baby Groot? Although I have to admit, I felt like Baby Groot was kind of a crutch in this movie. Whenever a scene started to slow down, the movie started to lose momentum, they would just give us some Baby Groot and everything would quote-unquote be okay. Not quite. I'm not really sold on Kurt Russell as Ego, just because it felt like the movie didn't have a true villain to work with. But the movie has something about James Gunn's writing, that he finds a way to inject heart and soul into a film where you least expect it. And there are some beautiful moments here, especially between Rocket and Yondu. They're just fantastic. I would say that there's one particular scene that I really don't want to spoil that happens later in the movie that might be the most emotional scene in all of the Marvel Universe. I don't know if there's really been that many truly emotional, impactful moments in the Marvel Universe. Yes, there have been exciting scenes, funny scenes, scenes that make you so, like, fight scenes that make you go, holy crap. But in terms of the movies that hit you right in the gut, I don't know if there have been that many of them, but Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 has one of them. So definitely go check that out. That was one that everybody's going to buy that anyway. So me telling you to go buy it, I mean, what's the point? But if you are going to go buy it, make sure you check it out at punchdrunkcritics.com and just click on the shop button. And the other movie is Kill Switch, which debuted on Netflix. It's a sci-fi action movie, first-person perspective, kind of like Hardcore Henry. And it stars Dan Stevens. If only it actually was like Hardcore Henry. Hardcore Henry was fun, and it was intense, and it really did play like a video game. Kill Switch, not so much. It's slow and dull, which is the last thing a first-person perspective anything should be. So Kill Switch you can avoid. All right. Let's talk a little bit about some things that happened in the news, because this is crazy. This is crazy, the amount of stuff that's going on. I got to start with the breaking news from, I think it was from yesterday, from last night, which is Martin Scorsese and Todd Phillips teaming up on a Joker origin story. What do you think about that? Martin Scorsese making a DC Comics film. Isn't that wild? Now, he's only producing. Him and Todd Phillips have been trying to work together for a long time, and they're finally going to get to. Phillips, who directed the Hangover movies and War Dogs, he's going to be behind the camera. But the movie is going to be an origin story set in the 80s. And it's described as a hard-boiled crime drama. But it's not going to feature Jared Leto's version of the Joker. It may be about that same Joker, but it'll be set so early on that it'll probably be a different actor playing the role. So this is just amazing to me, and I don't know quite what to make of it yet, except that it seems like Warner Brothers Warner Brothers is branching out from the DCU continuity and making a whole series of spinoffs now that may or may not be in continuity. And it seems like they're trying to do both. Which, honestly, that may be the best thing they've done in order to separate themselves from Marvel. One of the worst comparisons I hear all the time is that DCU is just trying to copy Marvel. I never really felt like that was the case. I know other people have. I've never seen that. They've not totally mimicked the Marvel style, the Marvel approach. That hasn't really been done. They're doing things their own way. They weren't making lighthearted movies. They're making darker films, more adult films. Now, we can argue about the how successful they were with those movies. But if they wanted to mimic the Marvel formula, man, Batman vs. Superman would have been a much happier movie. but that's not what they were doing. They were just doing something different. And the whole way they built up to Justice League has run counter to the way Marvel built up to the Avengers. It has not been the same at all. But whatever, it's easy, lazy comparison, so people make it. But this is something that can differentiate them to everybody, and I'm curious to see where it goes. And I'm curious to see how this project takes shape. You know how I feel. No project ever ends how it begins. And in Warner Brothers, especially with the DC films, that is more true than ever. I mean, Batman vs. Superman was an entirely different movie at the end than it was when it was first announced at Comic-Con a couple years earlier. I know, I was there when it was first revealed. And it looked like it was going to be sort of a remake of The Dark Knight Returns, and it ended up being something wildly different from that. There are some aspects of The Dark Knight Returns, but it was not even close. So this project is going to evolve over time, and I'm anxious to see exactly how it does that. And now, apparently, everybody's getting a Star Wars spinoff too. An Obi-Wan Kenobi spinoff is in the works, but surprisingly, so is a Jabba the Hutt spinoff. Why is Jabba the Hutt getting a spinoff movie? I just don't get it. But that is what's happening, apparently, or at least it's in the early stages of development. The Obi-Wan movie is as well, but probably a little bit more further along than the Jabba news is. And I guess we shouldn't be completely surprised by the Obi-Wan news, because it's been rumored for a couple of years now. I remember posting about it not too long ago. And Ewan McGregor has been saying forever that he wants to come back. Now, we don't know if he will. This movie might take place and might feature a younger Kenobi, or maybe even an older Kenobi during the Alec Guinness years. I have a feeling that no matter what they do, we'll see McGregor in the role again in some way, maybe in flashbacks or as part of a framing sequence. I have a feeling that is absolutely going to happen. But I'm curious about that, and it's going to have Stephen Daldry, who directed Billy Elliot, and The Reader, The Hours. He's the surprising choice to direct it. This is not the kind of movie he's ever done before. He's never done it. He's done big movies. The Hours is a huge film. So is The Reader. These are huge movies, but they're not huge in terms of like visual effects and set pieces. They're not the same. So this is an interesting step, and I feel like it has to do with Lucasfilm wanting another veteran director, the same way they brought in Ron Howard to finish up the Han Solo movie. They want a veteran director. They're not screwing around with younger filmmakers that they're not as fully aware of. They don't want a repeat of what happened with Phil Lord and Chris Miller. So they turned to somebody who was a known presence, a known commodity behind the camera, in Stephen Daldry. And it's not a bad choice. It's just a curious one because we've never seen this from him before. So we'll see where that goes. I don't know how long Disney plans on doing these spinoffs. I don't know if they'll continue on past the main trilogy once episode 9 wraps up. I mean, I doubt we're going to jump right into episode 10, 11, and 12. I imagine there'll be some kind of break or something in between. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's the way I see it. But this news with these two spinoffs seems to suggest that the spinoffs are going to be going on for a long time. And I feel like that could be a mistake. Like, that could be where we're starting to be like, yeah, these Star Wars movies are starting to be diminishing returns on these. That's what I'm starting to feel. Jabba the Hutt might be the first one where I'm like, I'm already like, why do we need a Jabba movie? I don't understand what appeal there is in a Jabba the Hutt movie, unless it's part of a Boba Fett movie. Now, everybody wants to see a Boba Fett movie. I don't think anybody's clamoring for Jabba the Hutt. You put Boba Fett in it, that's different. those are the big stories that I had for this week. I'll have more on the next episode of Cinema Royale. And speaking of which, we're at the end of the show. Assuming I can find where my outro music is. Do I have my outro music? I do. There it is. We're dealing with some technical issues, folks. Thanks for tuning in to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson. Check me out on PunchDrunkCritics.com every single day. Next week's show, not much is coming out. So I definitely want to review Bushwick starring Dave Bautista and Brittany Snow. And be sure to tune in tomorrow for my interview with Patty Cake star Danielle McDonald. You're going to love it. All right. I'm Travis Hobson, the Punch Drunk Critics. This has been Cinema Royale. I'm out. I'll talk to you later.